Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Peter Matthews, and I'm here with the host, Richard Gassaway. This is the Leaders Toolbox, looking at everything from command level decision making down to the daily office grind and personnel issues. Rich, FDIC is coming up. It's right around the corner. I know you're going to be there. Can you tell me what you're going to be doing?
Yep. Thanks, Pete, and thanks for all the listeners for tuning in. At the FDIC, I'm going to be doing a program on fireground command decision-making under stress, specifically focusing on the barriers that impact the commander's situation awareness and how to overcome those challenges so that the commander can stay focused on the task of commanding the incident. I've done some research in the area, and I'm going to perhaps be in a position to share some of the findings of that research as to how are fireground commanders being impacted, and then what things can they do to prevent it. And if you read the near-miss reports, especially the annual report of the highest-ranked contributing factor to near-miss events, it's loss of situation awareness. If you go into the NIOSH line of duty death reports and you read them, so many of them talk about the fireground command, incident command, use of the incident command system, and the loss of situation awareness of the incident, of what was happening and where the incident was headed, as a contributing factor to the line of duty death. So it's my quest to try to help people understand how that's happening, and better yet, how to prevent it from happening when you're commanding fireground incidents.
Rich, one of the things I did remember hearing from time to time, and it's been discussed before, is what exactly is situational awareness? Everyone seems to have their own take on what that means on the fireground. Can you explain it from the incident command end?
Yep. There, actually, in doing my research, Pete, I came up with seven different definitions of situation awareness that is used by researchers and practitioners. But the best one that I've been able to locate that I think most closely relates to what we do as fireground commanders is based on the work of Dr. Mike Ensley. Her website is www.saatechnologies.com, and I'll get that link to you to put up on the website. But she has done a lot of work studying battleground commanders and in aviation, and she developed essentially a three-pronged definition for situation awareness. So she says essentially situation awareness is three things. One, being able to capture the cues and the clues of what is happening around you. So that's the first part, is while you're responding and you pull up on the scene, being able to see smoke color, density, thickness, all the things you learn in the Art of Reading Smoke program, building construction, the quality of your crews, available water supply, terrain issues, weather issues, taking all of this in, capturing all of this. That's level one situation awareness. Level two situation awareness is being able to make sense out of all that. Okay, I've captured all this. Now what does it mean? What is the meaning of all this that I have seen and felt and sensed, and some of it's based on my experience and my intuition, and you know, am I able to understand what all of this means when I put it all together? In other words, I put all the first part of situation awareness level one is seeing all the pieces of the puzzle. The second part of situation awareness is putting those pieces of the puzzle together to form a picture. What does this mean? The third part, and this is where the one that I think is we're most vulnerable, or many of the reports that I've read on line of duty deaths and near misses, where I think we're most vulnerable in the level three situation awareness, and that is the ability to take levels one and two to another level. I'm using the word level too much, but you take your cues and your clues, that's level one, you process them into meaning, that's level two, and then level three is being able to predict where is this going, what's going to happen next, what's going to happen 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes from now. And I think that's where in the fire services we're missing some opportunities when we're at an incident to be able to foretell the bad things that are about to happen, but and to do it in such a way that we catch it before it happens, not let it happen then say, oh, hindsight 2020, but be able to say, I foresee this having a bad outcome, and I'm going to do something now to change the course of that outcome. When you read, you know, you watch these videos and read line of duty death reports, if you're probably some of the people out there listening saying, you know what, I'm the kind of person that can look at this and say, couldn't they see that coming? My God, I can see that coming. Okay, well, one, you're not under the stress of the incident at the time that it's happening, but I would challenge you to say, do you think they saw it coming and just let it go on purpose and to say, hey, you know, I'll just kill somebody in the process here? No, they didn't. They didn't see it coming, and there's reasons that they didn't see it coming, and this is some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about at FDIC and a couple of programs, and at Fire Rescue International, I'll be at a program doing a program there called 50 Ways to Kill Your Brother, and no offense to the women of the fire service. I just did a takeoff of the hit popular song and developed a program called 50 Ways to Kill Your Brother, where I talk about how fire ground commanders are losing situation awareness at all three levels and how to prevent that. So expect to hear some more about that, and hopefully you'll be able to tune into one of those programs, or maybe we can even do a podcast or a webcast dedicated to that. But obviously, I'm very passionate about this and the challenges that fire ground commanders are facing as a result of having their situation awareness, all three levels, impacted.
All right, Rich. Well, thank you for the explanation there. That kind of clears it up. Again, you hear the term all the time. It's a new term, but what does it mean? So thank you for mm-hmm. that.
Thanks for asking.
We'll get into the first question here. It says, I am a newly appointed training officer, and I'm trying to mandate annual training for all the troops in my combination department. After looking through various training records, I noticed that certain firefighters have not made the same training year after year. What action should I take to assure that everyone meets the standards set forth by the department?
Well, the first thing that flags, you know, whenever people write in with these questions, I always read it, and then there's just certain things in what they're writing that flag for me. And the first thing that flagged in this one was right up front, I'm a newly appointed training officer. And my advice to anybody newly appointed into their position is take a deep breath and pause. And realize that many of the problems that you're facing in your position are not problems that came up overnight, but rather problems that took years to create. And this person says, you know, after looking through the records, I see I have people for years who haven't attended certain training. Okay, so this isn't a brand new problem. It's a problem that's been ongoing, so it's not a problem that you need to solve overnight. And, you know, another set of flag for me is their use of a very strong term called mandate annual training. Nothing wrong with having required training, but I want to discourage this newly appointed training officer from flexing too much muscle right up front with their new position and their new authority and try to get some buy-in from the members of the department about what the problem is and how to address it or how to fix it. So I would suggest that they if they have individuals who they are concerned with, that they meet with those individuals and say, you know, I was reviewing the training records, and as a process of reviewing the training records, found these things that are showing deficient. Were you aware of that? And the person might say, well, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. Realize that it could be merely a record-keeping problem in the department. So the new training chief doesn't want to come in and whack someone for being deficient on having to get their training, only to find out that they weren't deficient. It was just bad record-keeping that was at play here. And then they got to go back and say, oh, you know, sorry, I whacked you on the side of the head with a baseball bat before I did my homework. So I would suggest that they meet with the people who have the deficiency and say, you know, this is what the records are showing. What do you think? You think this is accurate, not accurate? And try to, get some explanation and some understanding about what's going on and how good the records have been before they get too aggressive with dealing with the people who are allegedly deficient. And then I would encourage this new training officer, again, to talk with the larger membership of the department and say, this is the current situation with our training. What do you all have in the way of ideas about how we can improve the training or how we can move toward making certain topics required training and get some input and buy-in, and the term I like to use is fingerprints. Get the fingerprints of the membership all over the problem and the solution. Now, if this training chief is the only one, newly appointed training chief, is the only one sitting there thinking there's a problem and no one else is thinking they're a problem, then they're going to be trying to sell a solution to a whole bunch of people who don't understand the problem. And I like to use the analogy, somebody knocks on your door and they want to sell you aluminum siding. You say, well, my house is made of brick. I don't need aluminum siding. The aluminum siding salesperson isn't going to be very successful selling aluminum siding to a person with a brick home. And neither is the training chief going to be particularly successful trying to convince firefighters that they need to help this training chief fix a problem that they don't perceive exists. So I think that their first step is laying a foundation to meet with the members of the department to say, here is our challenges, here are our opportunities for improving our training program, and solicit ideas from the membership, get their fingerprints all over the problem, and get their suggestions to be part of the solution. A good facilitator is somebody who can lead the group toward the solution without actually giving them the answer. You know, this is what we're going to do and the way we're going to do it, and I'm closed-minded to anybody's ideas but mine, but rather help them frame up and understand the problem and then guide them toward a workable solution. And who knows what that solution will be? Let that rise up from the membership, and the training chief really keep them focused on, well, here's the problem that we have. We all agree. Yeah, we agree. Okay, then let's talk about how to get a workable solution that will get everybody trained to a certain minimum level. Now, depending on their department's history of training or not training, they may have a culture developed that is not, I should say, acceptable of fire department training. And I don't know that much about, the call or the podcast writer, because it's some limited information. But the problem might be cultural if they haven't trained in a long time. And haven't been focused and committed to training, and in comes the new person who wants to change the world and change the culture and change all those issues and make all the wrongs right. They're just waiting for an opportunity to do this. They better take some baby steps and go slow so that they end up building collaborators toward their solving their problems versus people that they're going to end up being confrontational with because they're trying to force a solution that the organization just isn't ready to embrace. And as far as dealing individually with the people who've missed the training, if indeed they've missed the training, anybody who's missed any training, develop a training schedule. These are the dates and the times that we're going to do this training. Get the schedule out there in advance. We're going to do this training. It's March. We're going to do this training in September, and it's going to be required training so everybody can prepare for it. They know well in advance that it's coming. They know well in advance what the requirements are. There's no surprises being sprung on anyone. It's all communicated out. And then, so you get the schedule out there, and then you also get a makeup process. And you say, here is the makeup process. If you're unable to attend this because you're, you know, whatever excuse you want to, you know, dog ate my homework, I was sick, I was working, I was on vacation, whatever it is, get the process out there that says, if you miss, this is the process that you make up by and the time frame that you make it up by. So that when you get that out there in advance, they stop looking and saying, geez, I can't scoot under the wire here because, you know, normally I could just say, oh, I was out of town, and then there's no follow-up or accountability. When you get it out there and say, here's the training, we're going to do it 4 months from now, and then if you miss it, here's the process that you're going to go through to make it up, and here's the timeline, and by this date, if you haven't made it up, then there could be the potential for whatever that consequence would be. You know, the training chief probably needs to talk to the chief of the department and say, you know, if we put this out 4 months in advance and tell everybody what the process is and what the requirements for the training are going to be and what the makeup date and time is going to be, chief, what's the consequence for those who, you know, are blatant about not participating? And whatever he or she agrees to is the consequence, then make sure you get that out there too, well in advance, so there's no surprises. So, you know, it's like I say, it's March. Next October, we're going to do this training. It's going to be a minimum requirement. It's mandatory. Here's the dates and times that we're going to do it on so you can plan for it. And if you miss it, here's the makeup. And if you miss the makeup, then here's the consequence. The consequence might be discipline. The consequence might be you'll have to go and find this training on your own somewhere and bring us back some proof that you've taken it. The consequence might be that you go on a leave of absence from the department until you have the minimum training. That's a local decision as to what consequence a department wants to put on it, but it should be communicated. There shouldn't be any surprises to somebody, especially these guys have missed this training for a couple times. Now they miss it for the third time. Well, nothing's happened to them the first two times they missed it. Now the third time they miss it, you know, there's some tremendous consequence, and they're going to say, well, that wasn't fair. You know, I missed it before, and there was never a consequence. So better to address it up front and say, you know, here's what we're going to do, here's when we're going to do it, and the whys and hows, and we're going to communicate it to everybody well in advance so everybody knows what the expectations are and what the consequence is if you miss it. But in summary, to the newly appointed training chief, is take a deep breath. The problem that you're trying to solve that wasn't created yesterday or last week. It's been around for a while, so take some time, involve people in the problem and the solution, get some fingerprints on it, and then communicate well a schedule, a makeup, and a potential consequence for those who miss mandatory training.
All right, Rich, we'll be right back after a quick break here.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio at firehouse.com with host Richard Gassaway. Chief, the second question comes from a lieutenant. This is a lieutenant of an engine company in a mid-sized city, and the chief's son, with less than 1 year on the job, has been assigned to my station after he ran into some troubles at his last assignment. The rumors of him being lazy, uninterested, and simply there for the ride appear to be true. I don't want to ruin anyone's reputation, but this firefighter could endanger the lives of our members. Any advice on how to deal with the chief's son?
Well, again, like the last one, there are certain things and questions that podcast writers write in about that flag for me. And, the obvious one here is that this person is the chief's son. And, initially, I read that and I went, so what? But, you know, there are the potential for some, I guess, bigger political ramifications of having the chief's son to deal with in this particular problem. But the one thing that I would encourage this lieutenant to do is, you know, he had said that there is some rumors of him being lazy, and what to say, rumors of him being uninterested, and rumors of him simply being there for the ride. I would encourage this lieutenant to give this recruit, he's been there less than a year, a recruit firefighter, give him the benefit of the doubt. It's not easy to come into a department and be the chief's son. He may be a firefighter who's trying to learn how to do the job right, doesn't know how to do the job right and do the job well, but the previous person that he worked for took a hands-off position in his supervision and his development because he was the chief's son. So I can't coach and counsel and reprimand and do the kind of things that I would do with other recruits to try to get them in line and keep them in line. They haven't done that because he's the chief's son. So maybe they haven't been fair to him because of his position, and maybe he's gotten special treatment, and I would say that special treatment might not necessarily be to his benefit, especially now if he's starting to develop this reputation. I think a lot of young people coming into the fire service who don't know how to do the job and don't know how to be self-disciplined and how to be motivated, and that's not a damnation of young people. I'm just using that as an example because they say that this person's been on the job for less than a year. But if they come in and they don't know better, then we have an obligation to teach them better. Teach them better how to do their job. And if the person previous to this one took a hands off because he was the chief's son and allowed him to be lazy and allowed him to be uninterested and simply there for the ride, then shame on that person who previously supervised them. But your job now is harder because you're having to deal with somebody who should have, you know, be getting them lessons right from the get go, and perhaps they haven't been. And sometimes when the new recruit is a relative of a ranking officer, a chief or otherwise, there's different expectations for that person. You know, say the chief was really top-notch and gung-ho, and in his early days, you know, he was really, the among the better of the firefighters in the department. Well, those who remember the chief as that, then maybe holding the same expectations for the chief's son. And that isn't fair to have the chief's son be in the shadow of his father and trying to maintain the same high expectations for him that others had come to have for his father. And there also could be some resentment. There could be people that say, you know, he only got the job because he's the chief's son. He's really not worthy of the job. He's really not good at it. He only got it because he's the chief's son. Whether it's true or whether it's not, I'm not here to judge that. But when you label people and you take those rumors and you allow them to perpetuate, you're helping to put that person into a corner that they can't get out of, or into a hole that they can't get out of. And so because he's the chief's son, he brings some of this baggage with him to the job. Whether he wants to or he doesn't, it just comes along with having the same last name and being related to a ranking person on the department. What I would encourage this lieutenant to do is to treat him as he would any other recruit firefighter, and that is to communicate his expectations to this recruit firefighter the same as he would anyone else, in the same consistent fashion, one-on-one coaching, teaching, counseling, and give this young person an opportunity to be his best without having to have the cloak of being associated as the chief's son. Yeah, maybe he's embarrassed. But maybe he's embarrassed to be the chief's son. Not that he's embarrassed of his dad, but he's embarrassed that people hold him to higher standards than what he's able to fulfill. And maybe he isn't lazy. Maybe he's just afraid to step out of the shadows of his father and to make mistakes and to embarrass his dad and to embarrass the family name that his dad's worked so hard to build up over the time. And, you know, imagine the stress that this young person must be under as well. And so when you take that into consideration, I think this lieutenant has a wonderful opportunity to help bring this person along in ways that are maybe a little non-traditional because of the baggage he brings to the job and because of the fact that there'll be people who have great expectations for him or others who resent him. He's not your typical recruit firefighter. And so your solution might have to be atypical as well, and you may have to spend a little bit of extra time with him that you might not have otherwise done with other firefighters to try to get him to come along. And I wouldn't hesitate to talk with him about things like, what's it feel like to, come onto the department and be the son of the chief? And, he might open up and say, this is a tough ride. I never really expected, that people would hold me to the same expectations that they hold my dad to, or they're afraid to talk about the department in constructive ways when I'm around because they think I'm going to run home and tell my dad and get him talking about it. And you might find out that and deep down inside he's a good person, but he's been dealt a tough hand out of the deck of cards, and offer some advices to help him with ways to work through that and cope with that. So I think that just labeling him as based on the rumors of lazy or uninterested, and and tying that into the fact that he's the chief's son, I would very much discourage this lieutenant from giving up on him. Matter of fact, just the opposite. I would encourage him to give him some extra special time and attention as he needs to really understand what this young person is going through and what their motivations are. And as he gets to know him better, he'll be able to judge, too, what the person's really true motivation is. I would also encourage this lieutenant to make sure that he communicates well with his superior officer, his captain or his station chief or whoever the next is up the line, to make sure that they're in the loop about what his challenges are and his plan for helping to fix it. Because if along the way it becomes challenging, then he needs to have somebody that can back him up. He's going to need somebody to say, yep, I was in the loop. I knew that these were the challenges he was dealing with. I knew that these, I was aware of this particular problem or that one and how he's tried to work through it. Another thing, depending on the chief of the department, and I know that some of you out there would wince at the mere suggestion of what I'm about to say, but there are chiefs out there who, if their relative is employed by the department, if that relative isn't doing a good job, the chief would want to know about it. And if you have to gauge that for yourself, if that chief is the kind of person who would want to know about it, and if so, talk to the chief and say, these are some of the challenges that we're having, and I want you to be aware of it and some of the things that we're doing to try to work through it, and what suggestions would you have? You've lived with him a lot of years. What suggestions would you have about how to that we could best help him be successful? And if the relationship is such that the young firefighter really is lazy and uninterested, that may come as a surprise to the chief. He may have not known that, and he may want to know that, and he can work it from the backside, because maybe he doesn't want to be embarrassed by having his kid damaging his great reputation that he's spent his career building up, and then have this kid who maybe is taking advantage of the fact that he is the chief's kid. Let's just say I've been defending the young firefighter, but let's put the shoe on the other foot and say maybe he's taking advantage of the opportunity for a free ride because his father is in the top position in the department. The chief might want to know about this so that he can address it with his kid. Now I realize there's a risk of telling the chief your son is a less than stellar performer, But, you know, before this lieutenant gets to the position where he needs to talk with the chief, I'd spend a lot of time trying to develop that young recruit firefighter and giving them my time and attention. And then in the end, if you assess that it really is, that he is, you know, lazy and uninterested, then consider talking with the chief about it and make sure that your supervisor's in the loop as well. Again, it ties somewhat to the relationship that the department has with the chief and the chief has with his son, and the podcast writer doesn't talk a whole lot about what those kind of relationships are like, but so I have to assume that, you know, the chief is the kind of person that you could go and talk to about the problem and the kind of person who would offer some good advice as to how to, you know, solve it or offer to talk to his son and, you know, so there's some assumptions that I'm making about the quality of the chief and his ability to be professional when dealing with a family member, but I think there's an opportunity here to not take the. In summary, my advice to the lieutenant of the mid-sized department who now has the chief's son is to give him the benefit of the doubt and to set the rumors and the innuendos and the history of what's happened with him, past troubles, set it all aside, treat him as a new recruit, give him the benefit of the doubt, spend time with him, get to know him, talk with him, find out where he's coming from, assess his abilities, develop a plan to help him get on track and developed, and in the end, if it's still not working, make sure that your supervisor is involved, and then consider the possibility of talking with the chief, depending on, you know, the leadership style of the chief.
All right, Rich. Well, thank you very much. Great information, as always. If you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway, or if you have any comments for the show, please drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com, or you can use the little chat box at the comment box at the bottom of the podcast player page. Rich, thank you very much. We'll see you in just a couple of days here in Indianapolis, and we'll hear from you again real soon.
Okay. Again, thanks to all the listeners, and thanks for your kind feedback on the program. I appreciate that.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio. Thank you.